sitting together, so the winds drove her up and down the deep. One moment Notus tossed her on for Boreas to drive, the next would Eurus give her up for Zephyrus to chase. But the daughter of Cadmus saw him, fair-ankled Ino, that goddess pale who formerly was mortal and of human speech, but now in the water's depths shares the gods' honors. She pitied Odysseus, cast away and meeting sorrow, and like a petrel on the wing she rose from the sea's trough, and lighting on his strong-built raft, spoke to him thus: "Unhappy man, why is earth-shaking Poseidon so furiously enraged that he makes many ills spring up around you? Destroy you shall he not, however wroth he be. Only do this. You seem to me not to lack understanding. Strip off these clothes, and leave your raft for winds to carry. Then strike out with your arms, and seek a landing on the Phaeacian coast, where fate allows you safety. Here, spread this wimple underneath your breast. It is immortal. Have no fear of suffering or death. But when your hands shall touch the shore, untie and fling the wimple into the wine-dark sea, well off the shore, yourself being turned away." Saying this, the goddess gave the wimple, and she herself plunged back into the surging sea in likeness of a petrel. The dark wave closed around. Then hesitated long-tried royal Odysseus, and in dismay he said to his stout heart, "Oh me, I fear that here again an immortal plots me harm in bidding me leave my raft. I will not yet obey, for in the distance I saw land where it was said my safety lies. This I will do, for best it seems. So long as the beams hold in the fastenings, here will I stay and bide what I must bear. But when the surge shatters my raft, then I will swim. There's no better plan." While he thus doubted in his mind and heart, earth-shaking Poseidon raised a great wave, gloomy and grievous and with arching crest, and launched it on him. And as a gusty wind tosses a heap of grain when it is dry, and some it scatters one way, some another, so were the long beams scattered. But Odysseus, mounting a beam, as if he rode a steed, stripped off the clothing which divine Calypso gave, spread quickly the wimple underneath his breast, and plunged down headlong in the sea with hands outstretched, ready to swim. The great earth-shaker spied him, and shaking his head he muttered to his heart, "Thus, after meeting many ills, be tossed about the sea until you join a people who are favorites of Zeus. But even then, I trust, you will not laugh at danger." Saying this, he lashed his full-maned horses and came to Ægae, where his lordly dwelling stands. And now Athena, daughter of Zeus, formed a fresh project. She barred the pathway of the other winds, bade them to cease and all be laid to rest. But she roused bustling Boreas, and before it broke the waves that safely among the oar-loving Phaeacians might come high-born Odysseus, freed from death and doom. Then 2 nights and 2 days on the resistless waves he drifted. Many a time his heart faced death. But when the fair-haired dawn brought the 3rd day, then the wind ceased. There came a breathless calm. And close at hand he spied the coast, as he cast a keen glance forward, upborne on a great wave. As when the precious life is watched by children in a father who lies in sickness, suffering great pain and slowly wasting, for a hostile power assails him, and then the one thus prized, the god set free from danger, so precious in Odysseus' eyes appeared the land and trees. Onward he swam, impatient for his feet to touch the ground. But when he was as far away as one can call, he heard a pounding of the ocean on the ledges, for the great waves roared as on the barren land they madly dashed, and all was whirled in spray. There was no harbor here to hold a ship, no open roadstead, only projecting bluffs, ledges, and reefs. At this, Odysseus' knees grew feeble, and his very soul, and in dismay he said to his stout heart, "Alas, when Zeus now lets me see unlooked-for land, and forcing my way along the gulf, I finally reach its end. No landing anywhere appears out of the foaming sea. Outside are jagged reefs, around thunder the surging waves, and smooth and steep rises the rocky shore. To the edge the sea is deep, and possible it is not to get a footing with both feet and so escape from harm. If I should try to land, great sweeping waves might dash me on the solid rock. Useless would the attempt be. But if I swim still farther, hoping to find a sloping shore and harbors off the sea, I fear a sweeping storm may bear me yet again along the swarming sea, loudly lamenting. Or God may send upon me a monster of the deep, and many such great Amphitrite breeds, for I know how angry is the great land-shaker." While he thus doubted in his mind and heart, a huge wave bore him onward toward the rugged shore. There would his skin have been stripped off and his bones broken, had not the goddess clear-eyed Athena given him counsel. Struggling, he grasped the rock with both his hands and clung there, groaning till the great wave passed. That one he thus escaped, but the back-flowing water struck him again, still struggling, and swept him out to sea. And just as when a polyp is torn from out its bed, about its suckers clustering pebbles cling, so on the rocks pieces of skin were stripped from his strong hands. The great wave covered him. Then miserably, before his time, Odysseus would have died, if clear-eyed Athena had not given him ready thought. Rising beyond the waves, which thundered on the coast, he swam along outside, eyeing the land, in hopes to find a sloping shore and harbors off the sea. But when, as he swam, he reached the mouth of a fair-flowing river, there the ground seemed most fit, clear of all stones and sheltered from the breeze. As he felt the river flowing forth, within his heart he prayed, "Hearken, O Lord, whoe'er thou art! Thee long desired I find, when flying from the sea and from Poseidon's threats. Respected even of immortal gods is he who comes a fugitive, as I here now come to thy current and thy knees through weary toil. Show pity, Lord, I call myself thy suppliant." He spoke, and the god straightway stayed the stream and checked the waves, before him made a calm and brought him safely into the river's mouth. Both knees hung loose, and both his sturdy arms, for by the brine his power was broken. His body was all swollen, and water gushed in streams from mouth and nostrils. So, breathless and speechless, in a swoon he lay, and dire fatigue o'ercame him. But when he gained his breath, and in his breast the spirit rallied, then he unbound the wimple of the goddess and dropped it in the river running out to sea. And a great wave bore it back down the stream, and Ino soon received it in her friendly hands. But he, retreating from the river, lay down among the rushes and kissed the bounteous earth. And in dismay he said to his stout heart, "Ah, me, what shall I do? What will become of me even now? If by the stream I watch throughout the weary night, may not the bitter frost and the fresh dew together after this swoon end my exhausted life? The breeze from off a river blows cool toward early morning. But if I climb the hillside up to the dusky wood and sleep in the thick bushes, supposing that the chill and weariness depart and pleasant sleep come on, I'm afraid I may become the wild beast's prey and prize." Yet, on reflecting thus, this seemed the better way. He hastened, therefore, to the wood. This he found near the water, with open space around. He crept under a pair of shrubs sprung from a single spot. The one was wild, the other common, olive. These no force of wind with its chill breath could pierce. No sunbeam smite nor rain passed through. They grew so thickly intertwined with one another. Under them crept Odysseus. and quickly with his hands he scraped a bed together, an ample one, for a thick fall of leaves was there, enough to shelter two or three men in winter time, however severe the weather. This long-tried royal Odysseus saw with joy, and lay down in the midst, heaping the fallen leaves above. As a man hides a brand in a dark bed of ashes, at some outlying farm where neighbors are not near, hoarding a seed of fire no otherwise to be lighted, even so did Odysseus hide himself in leaves. And on his eyes Athena poured a sleep, quickly to ease him from the fatigue of toil, letting his eyelids close. Book 6. The Landing in Phaeacia. Thus long-tried royal Odysseus slumbered here, heavy with sleep and toil. But Athena went to the land and town of the Phaeacians. This people once, in ancient times, lived in the open highlands, near that rude folk the Cyclops, who often plundered them, being in strength more powerful than they. Moving them thence, godlike Nausithous, their leader, established them at Scyria, aloof from trading folk. He ran a wall around the town, built houses there, made temples for the gods, and laid out farms. But he long since had met his doom and gone to the house of Hades, and Alcinous now was reigning, trained in wisdom by the gods. To this man's dwelling came the goddess, clear-eyed Athena, planning a safe return for brave Odysseus. She hastened to a chamber, richly wrought, in which a maid was sleeping, of form and beauty like the immortals, Nausicaa, daughter of proud Alcinous. Nearby, two damsels, dowered with beauty by the graces, slept by the threshold, one on either hand. The shining doors were shut, but Athena, like a breath of air, moved to the maid's couch, stood by her head, and thus addressed her, taking the likeness of the daughter of Dymas, the famed seaman, a maiden just Nausicaa's age, dear to her heart. Taking her guise, thus spoke clear-eyed Athena, "Nausicaa, how did your mother have a child so heedless? Your gay clothes lie uncared for, though the wedding time is near, when you must wear fine clothes yourself and furnish them to those that may attend you. From things like these a good repute arises, and father and honored mother are made glad. Then let us go a-washing at the dawn of day, and I will go to help, that you may soon be ready. For really not much longer will you be a maid. Already you have for suitors the chief ones of the land throughout Phaeacia, where you too were born. Come, then, beg your good father early in the morning to harness the mules and cart, so as to carry the men's clothes, gowns, and bright-hued rugs. Yes, and for you yourself it is more decent so than setting forth on foot. A long way from the city are the pools." Saying this, clear-eyed Athena passed away, off to Olympus, where they say the dwelling of the gods stands fast forever. Never with winds is it disturbed, nor by the rain made wet, nor does the snow come near, but everywhere the upper air spreads cloudless, and a bright radiance plays over all, and there the blessed gods are happy all their days. Thither now came the clear-eyed one, when she had spoken with the maid. Soon bright-throned morning came, and waked fair-robed Nausicaa. She marveled at the dream, and hastened through the house to tell it to her parents, her dear father and her mother. She found them still indoors. Her mother sat by the hearth among the waiting women, spinning sea-purple yarn. She met her father at the door, just going forth to join the famous princes at the council, to which the high Phaeacian summoned him. So, standing close beside him, she said to her dear father, "Papa dear, could you not have the wagon harnessed for me, the high one with good wheels, to take my nice clothes to the river to be washed, which now are lying dirty? Surely for yourself it is but proper, when you are with the first men holding councils, that you should wear clean clothing. 5 good sons, too, are here at home, 2 married, and 3 merry young men still, and they are always wanting to go to the dance wearing fresh clothes. And this is all a trouble on my mind. Such were her words, for she was shy of naming the glad marriage to her father. But he understood it all, and answered thus, "I do not grudge the mules, my child, nor anything beside. Go. Quickly shall the servants harness the wagon for you, the high one, with good wheels, fitted with rack above." Saying this, he called to the servants, who gave heed. Out in the court they made the easy mule cart ready. They brought the mules and yoked them to the wagon. The maid took from her room her pretty clothing and stowed it in the polished wagon. Her mother put in a chest food the maid liked of every kind, put dainties in, and poured some wine into a goatskin bottle. The maid, meanwhile, had got into the wagon, and gave her in a golden flask some liquid oil that she might bathe and anoint herself, she and the waiting women. Nausicaa took the whip and the bright reins, and cracked the whip to start. There was a clatter of the mules, and steadily they pulled, drawing the clothing and the maid, yet not alone. Beside her went the waiting women, too. When now they came to the fair river's current, where the pools were always full, for in abundance clear water bubbles from beneath to cleanse the foulest stains, they turned the mules loose from the wagon and let them stray along the eddying stream to crop the honeyed pasturage. Then from the wagon they took the clothing in their arms, carried it into the dark water, and stamped it in the pits with rivalry and speed. And after they had washed and cleansed it of all stains, they spread it carefully along the shore, just where the waves washed up the pebbles on the beach. Then, bathing and anointing with the oil, they presently took dinner on the river bank, and waited for the clothes to dry in the sunshine. And when they were refreshed with food, the maids and they then began to play at ball, throwing their wimples off. White-armed Nausicaa led their sport. And as the huntress Artemis goes down a mountain, down long Taygetus or Erymanthus, exulting in the boars and the swift deer, while round her sport the woodland nymphs, daughters of aegis-bearing Zeus, and glad is Leto's heart, for all the rest her child o'ertops by head and brow, and easily marked is she, though all are fair, so did this virgin pure excel her women. But when Nausicaa thought to turn toward home once more, to yoke the mules and fold up the clean clothes, then a new plan the goddess formed, clear-eyed Athena. For she would have Odysseus wake and see the bright-eyed maid, who might to the Phaeacian city show the way. Just then the princess tossed the ball to one of her women, and missing her, it fell in the deep eddy. Thereat they screamed aloud. Royal Odysseus woke, and sitting up, debated in his mind and heart. "Alas, to what men's land am I come now? Lawless and savage are they, with no regard for right? Or are they kind to strangers and reverent toward the gods? It was as if there came to me the delicate voice of maids, nymphs, it may be, who haunt the craggy peaks of hills, the springs of streams and grassy marshes. Or am I now, perhaps, near men of human speech? Suppose I make a trial for myself and see." So saying, Royal Odysseus crept from the thicket, but with his strong hand broke a spray of leaves from the close wood, to be a covering round his body for his nakedness. He set off like a lion that is bred among the hills, and trusts its strength. Onward it goes, beaten with rain and wind, its two eyes glare, and now, in search of oxen or of sheep, it moves, or tracking the wild deer. Its belly bids it make trial of the flocks, even by entering the guarded folds. So was Odysseus about to meet those fair-haired maids, all naked though he was, for need constrained him. To them he seemed a loathsome sight, befouled with brine. They hurried off, one here, one there, over the stretching sands. Only the daughter of Alcinous stayed, for in her breast Athena had put courage, and from her limbs took fear. Steadfast she stood to meet him. And now Odysseus doubted whether to make his suit by clasping the knees of the bright-eyed maid, or, where he stood, aloof, in winning words to make that suit, and try if she would show the town and give him clothing. Reflecting thus, it seemed the better way to make his suit in winning words aloof, for fear if he should clasp her knees, the maid might be offended. Forthwith he spoke, a winning and shrewd speech. "I am your suppliant, princess. Are you some god or mortal? If one of the gods who hold the open sky to Artemis, daughter of mighty Zeus, in beauty, height, and bearing, I find you likest. But if you are a mortal, living on the earth, most happy are your father and your honored mother, most happy your brothers also. Surely their hearts ever grow warm with pleasure over you, when watching such a blossom moving in the dance. And then exceeding happy he, beyond all others, who shall with gifts prevail and lead you home. For I never before saw such a being with these eyes, no man, no woman, I am amazed to see. At Delos once, by Apollo's altar, something like you I noticed, a young palm shoot springing up. For thither too I came, and a great troop was with me, upon a journey where I was to meet with bitter trials. And just as when I looked on that, I marveled long within, since never before sprang such a stalk from earth. So, lady, I admire and marvel now at you, and greatly fear to touch your knees. Yet grievous woe is on me. Yesterday, after 20 days, I escaped the wine-dark sea, and all that time the waves and boisterous winds bore me from the island of Ogygia. Now some god cast me here, that probably here also I may meet with trouble. For I do not think trouble will cease, but much the gods will first accomplish. Then, princess, have compassion, for it is you to whom through many grievous toils I first am come, none else I know of all who own this city and this land. Show me the town, and give me a rag to throw around me, if you had perhaps on coming here some wrapper for your linen. And may the gods grant all that in your thoughts you long for, husband and home and true accord may they bestow. For a better and higher gift than this there cannot be, when with accordant aims man and wife have a home. Great grief it is to foes and joy to friends, but they themselves best know its meaning." Then answered him white-armed Nausicaa, "Stranger, because you do not seem a common, senseless person, and Olympian Zeus himself distributes fortune to mankind, and gives to high and low, even as he will to each, and this he gave to you, and you must bear it, therefore. Now you have reached our city and our land, you shall not lack for clothes, nor anything besides, which it is fit a hard-pressed suppliant should find. I will point out the town and tell its people's name. The Phaeacians own this city and this land, and I am the daughter of proud Alcinous, on whom the might and power of the Phaeacians rests." She spoke and called her fair-haired waiting women. "My women, stay. Why do you run because you saw a man? You surely do not think him evil-minded? The man is not alive, and never will be born, who can come and offer harm to the Phaeacian land, for we are very dear to the immortals, and then we live aloof, far on the surging sea. No other tribe of men has dealings with us. But this poor man is here through having lost his way, and we should give him aid. For in the charge of Zeus all strangers and beggars stand, and a small gift is welcome. Then give, my women, to the stranger food and drink, and bathe him in the river where there is shelter from the breeze." She spoke, the others stopped and called to one another, and down they brought Odysseus to the place of shelter, even as Nausicaa, daughter of proud Alcinous, had ordered. They placed a robe and tunic there for clothing. They gave him, in the golden flask, the liquid oil, and bade him bathe in the stream's currents. Then to the waiting women said royal Odysseus, "Women, stand here aside, while by myself I wash the salt off from my back, and with the oil anoint me. For it is long since ointment touched my skin, But before you I will not bathe, for I am ashamed to bear myself among you fair-haired maids." So he spoke. The women went away, and told it to the maid. And now with water from the stream royal Odysseus washed his skin clean of the salt, which clung about his back and his broad shoulders, and wiped from his head the foam brought by the barren sea. And when he had thoroughly bathed and oiled himself, and had put on the clothing which the chaste maiden gave, Athena, daughter of Zeus, made him taller than before, and stouter to behold. And she made the curling locks to fall around his head, as on the hyacinth flower. As when a man lays gold on silver, some skilful man whom Hephaestus and Pallas Athena have trained in every art, and he fashions graceful work, so did she cast a grace upon his head and shoulders. He walked apart along the shore, and there sat down, beaming with grace and beauty. The maid observed, then to her fair-haired waiting women said, "Hearken, my white-armed women, while I speak. Not without purpose on the part of all the gods that hold Olympus is this man's meeting with the godlike Phaeacians. A while ago he really seemed to me ill-looking, but now he is like the gods who hold the open sky. Oh, might a man like this be called my husband, having his home here and content to stay? But give, my women, to the stranger food and drink." She spoke, and very willingly they heeded and obeyed, and set beside Odysseus food and drink. Then long-tried royal Odysseus eagerly drank and ate, for he had long been fasting. And now to other matters white-armed Nausicaa turned her thoughts. She folded the clothes and laid them in the beautiful wagon. She yoked the stout-hoofed mules, mounted herself, and calling to Odysseus, thus she spoke and said, "Arise now, stranger, and hasten to the town, that I may bring you on the way to my wise father's house, where you shall see, I promise you, the best of all Phaeacia. Only do this. You seem to me not to lack understanding. While we are passing through the fields and farms, here with my women, behind the mules and cart, walk rapidly along, and I will lead the way. But as we near the town, round which is a lofty rampart, a beautiful harbor on each side, and a narrow road between, there curved ships line the road, for every man has his own mooring place. Beyond is the assembly near the beautiful grounds of Poseidon, constructed out of blocks of stone deeply embedded. Further along they make the black ship's tackling, cables, and canvas, and shape out the oars, for the Phaeacians do not care for bow and quiver, only for masts and oars of ships and the trim ships themselves, with which it is their joy to cross the foaming sea. Now the rude talk of such as these I would avoid, that no one afterwards may give me blame. For very forward persons are about the place, and some coarse man might say, if he should meet us, 'Tall and handsome stranger is following Nausicaa. Where did she find him? A husband he will be, her very own. Some castaway, perhaps, she rescued from his vessel, some foreigner, for we have no neighbors here.' Or at her prayer some long-entreated god has come straight down from heaven, and he will keep her his forever. So much the better, if she has gone herself and found a husband elsewhere. The people of our own land here, Phaeacians, she disdains, though she has many high-born suitors. So they will talk, and for me it would prove a scandal. I should myself censure a girl who acted so, who, heedless of friends while father and mother were alive, mingled with men before her public wedding. And, stranger, listen now to what I say, that you may soon obtain assistance and safe conduct from my father. Near our road you will see a stately grove of poplar trees belonging to Athena. In it a fountain flows, and round it is a meadow. That is my father's park, his fruitful vineyard, as far from the town as one can call. There sit and wait a while, until we come to the town and reach my father's palace. But when you think we have already reached the palace, enter the city of the Phaeacians, and ask for the palace of my father, proud Alcinous. Easily is it known. A child, though young, could show you the way, for the Phaeacians do not build their houses like the dwelling of Alcinous, their prince. But when his house and court receive you, pass quickly through the hall until you find my mother. She sits in the firelight by the hearth, spinning sea-purple yarn, a marvel to behold, and resting against a pillar. Her handmaids sit behind her. Here, too, my father's chair rests on the self-same pillar, and here he sits and sips his wine like an immortal. Passing him by, stretch out your hands to our mother's knees, if you would see the day of your return in gladness and with speed, although you come from far. If she regards you kindly in her heart, then there is hope that you may see your friends and reach your stately house and native land. Saying this, with her bright whip she struck the mules, and fast they left the river's streams, and well they trotted, well they plied their feet, and skillfully she reined them, that those on foot might follow, the waiting women and Odysseus, and moderately she used the lash. The sun was setting when they reached the famous grove, Athena's sacred ground, where royal Odysseus sat him down. And thereupon he prayed to the daughter of mighty Zeus. "Hearken, thou child of aegis-bearing Zeus, unwearied one, O hear me now, although before thou didst not hear me, when I was wrecked, what time the great land-shaker wrecked me. Grant that I come among the Phaeacians, welcomed and pitied by them." So spoke he in his prayer, and Pallas Athena heard, but did not yet appear to him in open presence, for she regarded still her father's brother, who stoutly strove with godlike Odysseus till he reached his land. Book 7. The Welcome of Alcinous. Here, then, long-tried royal Odysseus made his prayer, but to the town the strong mules bore the maid, and when she reached her father's famous palace, she stopped before the doorway, and round her stood her brothers, men like immortals, who from the cart unyoked the mules and carried the clothing in. The maid went to her chamber, where a fire was kindled for her by an old Epirean woman, the chamber-servant Eurymedusa, whom long ago curved ships brought from Epira. Her they had chosen from the rest to be the gift of honor for Alcinous, because he was the lord of all Phaeacians, and people listened to his voice as if he were a god. She was the nurse of white-armed Nausicaa at the palace, and she it was who kindled her the fire, and in her room prepared her supper. And now Odysseus rose to go to the city, but Athena kindly drew thick clouds around Odysseus, for fear some bold Phaeacian, meeting him, might trouble him with talk and ask him who he was. And just as he was entering the pleasant town, the goddess, clear-eyed Athena, came to meet him, disguised as a young girl bearing a water jar. She paused as she drew near, and royal Odysseus asked, "My child, could you not guide me to the house of one Alcinous, who is ruler of this people? For I am a toil-worn stranger, newly come from a distant foreign shore. Therefore, I know not one among the men who own this city and this land." Then said to him the goddess, clear-eyed Athena, "Certainly, good old stranger, I will show you the house for which you ask, for it is not far from my good father's. But follow in silence. I will lead the way. Cast not a glance at any man, and ask no questions, for our people do not well endure a stranger, nor courteously receive a man who comes from elsewhere. They trust in their swift ships, and traverse the great deep as the earth-shaker allows them. Swift are their ships as wing or thought." Saying this, Pallas Athena led the way in haste, and he walked after in the footsteps of the goddess. So the Phaeacians, famed for shipping, did not observe him walking through the town among them, because Athena, the fair-haired, powerful goddess, did not allow it, but in the kindness of her heart cast a magic mist about him. And now Odysseus admired the harbours, the trim ships, the meeting places of the lords themselves, and the long walls that were so high, fitted with palisades, a marvel to behold. Then, as they neared the famous palace of the king, the goddess, clear-eyed Athena, thus began, "Here, good old stranger, is the house you bade me show. You will see heaven-descended kings sitting at table here. But enter and have no misgivings in your heart, for the courageous man in all affairs better attains his end, come he from whence he may. First you shall find the queen within the hall. Arete is her name, sprung from the self-same ancestry as King Alcinous. In early days, earth-shaking Poseidon begot Nausithous by Perrhaebia, the chief of womankind in beauty, and youngest daughter of that bold Eurymedon, who once was king of the presumptuous giants, but now brought ruin on his impious tribe and on himself. By Perrhaebia, Poseidon had a son, sturdy Nausithous, who was king of the Phaeacians. Nausithous begot Rhexenor and Alcinous. But before Rhexenor had a son, Apollo of the silver bow smote him within his hall, soon after he was wed, and he left behind an only child, Arete. Alcinous took Arete for his wife, and he has honored her as no one else on earth is honored among the women who today keep houses for their husbands. Such heartfelt honor has she had, and has it still, from her own children, from Alcinous himself, and from the people also, who gaze on her as on a god, and greet her with welcomes when she walks about the town. For of sound judgment, woman though she is, she has no lack, and those whom she regards, though men, find troubles clear away. If she regards you kindly in her heart, then there is hope that you may see your friends and reach your high-roofed house and native land." Saying this, clear-eyed Athena passed away over the barren sea. She turned from pleasant Scyria and came to Marathon and wide-wayed Athens, and entered there the strong house of Erechtheus. Meanwhile Odysseus neared the lordly palace of Alcinous, and his heart was deeply stirred, so that he paused before he crossed the brazen threshold. For a sheen as of the sun or moon played through the high-roofed house of proud Alcinous. On either hand ran walls of bronze from threshold to recess, and round about the ceiling was a cornice of dark metal. Doors made of gold closed in the solid building. The doorposts were of silver, and stood on a bronze threshold, silver the lintel overhead, and gold the handle. On the two sides were gold and silver dogs. These had Hephaestus wrought, with subtle craft, to guard the house of proud Alcinous, creatures immortal, young forever. Within were seats planted against the wall, on this side and on that, from threshold to recess, in long array. And over these were strewn light, fine-spun robes, the work of women. Here the Phaeacian leaders used to sit, drinking and eating, holding constant cheer. And golden youths on massive pedestals stood, and held flaming torches in their hands to light by night the palace for the feasters. In the king's house are 50 serving-maids, some grinding at the mill the yellow corn, some plying looms or twisting yarn, who as they sit are like the leaves of a tall poplar, and from their close-spun linen liquid oil will fall. And as Phaeacian men are skilled beyond all others in speeding a swift ship along the sea, so are their women practiced at the loom, for Athena has given them in large measure skill in fair works and noble minds. Without the court, and close beside its gate, is a large garden covering 4 acres. Around it runs a hedge on either side. Here grow tall, thrifty trees, pears, pomegranates, apples with shining fruit, sweet figs and thrifty olives. On them fruit never fails. It is not gone in winter or in summer, but lasts throughout the year, for constantly the west wind's breath brings some to bud and mellows others. Pear ripens upon pear, apple on apple, cluster on cluster, fig on fig. Here, too, a teeming vineyard has been planted, one part of which, the drying place, lying on level ground, is heating in the sun. Elsewhere men gather grapes, and elsewhere still they tread them. In front, the grapes are green and shed their flower, but a second row are now just turning dark. And here trim garden beds along the outer line spring up in every kind, and all the year are gay. Nearby two fountains rise, one scattering its streams throughout the garden, one bounding by another course beneath the courtyard gate toward the high house. From this the townsfolk draw their water. Such at the palace of Alcinous were the gods' splendid gifts. Here long-tried royal Odysseus stood and gazed. Then, after he had gazed to his heart's fill on all, he quickly crossed the threshold and came within the house. He found the Phaeacian captains and counselors pouring libations from their cups to the clear-sighted speedy-comer, to whom they always offer a last cup when they prepare for bed. Along the hall went long-tried royal Odysseus, still clad in the thick cloud which Athena cast about him, until he came to Arete and to King Alcinous. About Arete's knees Odysseus threw his arms, and then the magic cloud retreated. Seeing the man, the people of the house were hushed and marveled as they gazed, and thus Odysseus made his supplication. "Arete, daughter of divine Rhexenor, to your husband I am come, and to your knees through many toils, and to these feasters too. The gods bestow upon them the blessing of long life, and to his children may each leave the wealth within his hall, and every honor men have given. But quickly grant me aid to reach my native land, for, long cut off from friends, I have been meeting hardship." When he had spoken thus, he sat down on the hearth among the ashes by the fire, while all were hushed to silence. At last the old lord Echeneus spoke, the oldest man of the Phaeacian race, preeminent in speech and full of knowledge of the past. He, with good will, addressed them thus, and said, "Alcinous, this is not quite honorable for you. It is unseemly that a stranger should be sitting on the hearth among the ashes. Awaiting words of yours, these men hold back. Come, then, rise up the stranger. Seat him on a silver-studded chair, and bid the pages mix more wine, that we may also pour to Zeus, the thunderer, who waits on worthy suppliants. And let the housekeeper give supper to the stranger from what she has in store." Now when revered Alcinous heard his word, he took by the hand Odysseus, keen and crafty, raised him from the hearth, and placed him on a shining chair, making his son arise, manly Laodamas, who sat beside his father, for his father loved him best. And water for the hands a servant brought in a beautiful pitcher made of gold, and poured it out over a silver basin for their washing, and spread a polished table by their side. And the grave housekeeper brought bread and placed before them, setting out food of many a kind, freely giving of her store. So long-tried royal Odysseus drank and ate. And now to the page revered Alcinous said, "Pontanus, mix a bowl and pass the wine to all within the hall, that we may also pour to Zeus, the thunderer, who waits on worthy suppliants." He spoke. Pontanus stirred the cheering wine and served to all, with a first pious portion for the cup. So after they had poured and drunk as their hearts would, then thus Alcinous addressed them, saying, "Hearken, Phaeacian captains and counselors, and let me tell you what the heart within me bids. After the feast is over, go to your homes and rest, and in the morning we will call more elders hither, and entertain the stranger at the hall, and make fit offering to the gods. Then afterwards we will take thought about his going, so that the stranger, free from toil and trouble, may by our guidance reach his land in gladness and with speed, although he comes from far. So shall he, meanwhile, meet no ill or harm till he set foot in his own land. There, in the days to come, he shall receive whatever fate and the stern spinners wove in his birth thread when his mother bore him. But if he be some deathless one come from above, then do the gods herein deal with us strangely, for heretofore the gods have always shown themselves without disguise, and when we offer splendid hecatombs, they sit beside us at the feast, even like ourselves. And if a man, walking alone, meet them upon his way, they do not hide, for we are of their kin, as are the Cyclops and the wild tribes of giants. Then wise Odysseus answered him and said, Alcinous, other thoughts of me be yours. I am not like the deathless ones who hold the open sky, either in form or bearing. But, on the contrary, I am like men that die. And whomsoever you have known bearing most grief among mankind, his sorrows I could equal. Yes, even more distresses still I might relate, which first and last I bore at the gods' bidding. But let me know, though sick at heart, take food, for nothing is more brutal than an angry belly. Perforce it bids a man attend sadly, though he be worn, though grief be on his mind. Even so, I too have grief upon my mind, and yet this evermore calls me to eat and drink. All I have borne it makes me quite forget, and bids me take my fill. But do you hasten at the dawn of day, to land unhappy me in my own country, much though I still must bear, and let life cease when once I have beheld my goods, my slaves, and my great high-roofed house. He spoke, and all approved, and bade send forth the stranger, for rightly he had spoken. Then, after they had poured and drunk as their hearts would, desiring rest, they each departed homeward. So in the hall was royal Odysseus left behind. Arete, too, and godlike Alcinous sat beside him, while servants cleared away the dishes of the meal. Then thus began white-armed Arete. For when she saw Odysseus, she knew his robe and tunic to be the beautiful clothing which she herself had made, she and her waiting women. And speaking in winged words, she said, "Stranger, I will myself first ask you this. Who are you? Of what people? Who gave this clothing to you? Did you not say you came to us when lost at sea?" Then wise Odysseus answered her and said, "Hard it were, queen, fully to tell my woes, because the gods of heaven have given me many. Still, what you ask and seek to know I will declare. Ogygia is an island lying far out at sea, where the daughter of Atlas dwells, crafty Calypso, a fair-haired, powerful goddess. Her no one visits, neither god nor mortal man. But hapless me some heavenly power brought to her hearth, and all alone, for Zeus with a gleaming bolt smote my swift ship and wrecked it in the middle of the wine-dark sea. There all the rest of my good comrades perished. But I myself caught in my arms the keel of my curved ship and drifted for 9 days. Upon the 10th, in the dark night, gods brought me to the island of Ogygia, where dwells Calypso, the fair-haired, powerful goddess. Receiving me, she loved and cherished me, and often said that she would make me an immortal, young forever. But she never beguiled the heart within my breast. Here for 7 years I lingered, and often with my tears bedewed the immortal robes Calypso gave. But when the 8th revolving year was come, she bade me, even urged me, to depart, whether through a message sent from Zeus, or that her own mind changed. Upon a strong-built raft she sent me forth, giving abundant food, bread, and sweet wine. She clad me in immortal robes and sent along my course a fair and gentle breeze. For 17 days I sailed across the sea. On the 18th there came in sight the dim heights of your coast, and I was glad at heart. Ill-fated, I who yet must meet the sore distress which earth-shaking Poseidon on me sent. for he awoke the winds and barred my progress, stirred marvelously the waters, and the waves did not suffer me, spite of my many groans, to ride my raft. This soon the tempest shattered, but I, by swimming, forced my way through the flood, till at your coast the wind and water brought me in. Here, as I tried to land, the waves upon the shore might well have overcome me, casting me on great rocks and on forbidding ground. But I turned back and swam until I reached a stream where the ground seemed most fit, all clear of stones and sheltered from the breeze. Gathering my strength, I staggered out, and the immortal night drew near. Off to a distance from the heaven-descended stream I walked, and fell asleep among the bushes, heaping the leaves around. And here God poured upon me a slumber without end. For lying among the leaves, and sad at heart, I slept all night till morning, then till noon. The sun was going down as the sweet slumber left me. And now upon the shore I saw your daughter's maids playing a game, and she among them seemed a goddess. To her I made entreaty, and she did not lack sound judgment, such as you could not think that a young person meeting you would show, for usually the young are giddy. She gave me bread enough and sparkling wine. She bathed me in the river and gave to me these clothes. Thus, though in trouble, I have told you all the truth. Then answered him Alcinous, and said, Stranger, in this my child behaved not rightly, in that she did not bring you hither with her maids, yet it was she from whom you first sought aid. Then wise Odysseus answered him, and said, Sire, do not for this reproach the blameless girl, for she instructed me to follow with the maids. But I would not, for fear and very shame, lest possibly your heart might be offended at the sight. Suspicious creatures are we sons of men on earth. Then answered him Alcinous, and said, Stranger, the heart within my breast is not one lightly troubled. Better good sense in all things. O Father Zeus, Athena, and Apollo, that such a man as you, so like in mind to me, might take my child, be called my son-in-law, and here abide. For I would give you house and goods if you would like to stay. Against your wish shall no Phaeacian hold you. That Father Zeus forbid. Nay, I will fix your setting forth, and you may rest secure. Tomorrow shall it be. And you shall be lying all the time wrapped in a sleep, while my men speed you onward over calm seas until you reach your land and home, or anywhere you please. Yes, though it were beyond Euboea, which is called the farthest shore by those among our people who once saw it, when they carried light-haired Rhadamanthus to visit Tityus, the son of Gaea. So far they went without fatigue, performing all, and on the self-same day finished the journey home. But you yourself shall judge how excellent my ships and young men are in tossing up the water with the oar. He spoke, and glad was long-tried royal Odysseus, who, making his prayer, uttered these words, and said, O Father Zeus, all that Alcinous has said may he fulfill. Then on the fruitful earth his name shall never die, and I shall reach my home. So they conversed together. Meantime, white-armed Arete bade her maids to set a bed beneath the portico, to lay upon it beautiful purple rugs, spread blankets over these, and then place woolen mantles on the outside for a covering. So the maids left the hall with torches in their hands, and after they had spread the comfortable bed with busy speed, they summoned Odysseus, drawing near and saying, Up, stranger, come to sleep, your bed is ready. So did they speak, and to him rest seemed delightful. Thus long-tried royal Odysseus laid him down to sleep upon the well-bored bedstead beneath the echoing portico. But Alcinous slept in the recess of his high hall, his wife, the queen, making her bed beside him. Book 8. The Stay in Phaeacia. Soon, as the early rosy-fingered dawn appeared, revered Alcinous rose from bed, and up rose also high-born Odysseus, spoiler of cities. And now revered Alcinous led the way to the assembly place of the Phaeacians, which lay beside the ships. When they were come, they took their seats on polished stones set side by side, while Pallas Athena went throughout the town in likeness of the page of shrewd Alcinous, planning a safe return for brave Odysseus. And approaching one and another man, she gave the word, "Come hither, Phaeacian captains and counselors. Come, hasten to the assembly to hear about the stranger who came but lately to the house of wise Alcinous, when cast away at sea. In form he is like the immortals." With words like these she stirred in each a zeal and a desire, and speedily the assembly place, and all its seats, were filled with those who came. Then many marveled when they saw the wise son of Laertes, for Athena cast a wondrous grace about his head and shoulders, and made him taller than before, and stouter to behold, that so he might find favor in all Phaeacian eyes, as one of power and of worth, and that he might win, too, the many games in which the Phaeacians tried Odysseus. So when they were assembled, and all had come together, Alcinous thus addressed them, saying, "Hearken, Phaeacian captains and counselors, and let me tell you what the heart within me bids. This stranger, who he is I do not know, came hither as a wanderer from peoples east or west. He begs us for assistance, and prays it be assured. Then let us, even as heretofore, furnish assistance promptly, for never has a stranger reached my halls and tarried long distressed for lack of aid. Come, let us launch into the sacred sea a black ship, freshly fitted, and let the 52 youths be chosen from the land who have at former times been found the best. Then, after lashing carefully the oars upon the pins, all disembark and take a hasty meal, coming for this to me. I will make good provision for you all. That charge I give the youths. But for the rest of you, you sceptered kings, come to my goodly palace, that there within my hall we entertain the stranger. Let none refuse, and call the sacred bard Demodocus, for surely God has granted him exceeding skill in song, to cheer us in whatever way his soul is moved to sing." So saying, he led the way. The sceptered princes followed, and a page went to seek the sacred bard, while 52 picked young men departed, as he ordered, to the shore of the barren sea. On coming to the ship and to the sea, they launched the black ship into deep water, put mast and sail in the black ship, fitted the oars into their leathern slings, all in due order, and up aloft spread the white sail. Out in the stream they moored her, then took their way to the great house of wise Alcinous. Filled were the porticos, the courts and rooms with those already come. Many were there, both young and old. For them Alcinous sacrificed 12 sheep, 8 white-toothed swine, 2 swing-paced oxen. These the men flayed and served, and made a merry feast. Meanwhile the page drew near, leading the honored bard. The muse had greatly loved him, and had given him good and ill. She took away his eyesight, but gave delightful song. Pontantous placed for him among the feasters a silver-studded chair, backed by a lofty pillar, and hung the tuneful lyre upon its peg above his head, and the page showed him how to reach it with his hand. By him he set a tray and a good table, and placed thereon a cup of wine to drink as need should bid. So on the food spread out before them they laid hands. Now after they had stayed desire for drink and food, the muse impelled the bard to sing men's glorious deeds, a lay whose fame was then as wide as is the sky. He sang the strife of Odysseus with Pelian Achilles, how they once quarreled at the gods' high feast with furious words, and Agamemnon, king of men, rejoiced in spirit when the bravest of the Achaeans quarreled. For Phoebus Apollo had by oracle declared it so should be, at hallowed Pytho, when Agamemnon crossed its stony threshold, to ask for a response. Then was the day the tide of woe began to roll on Trojans and on Danaans by will of mighty Zeus. So sang the famous bard. Meanwhile Odysseus clutched his great purple cloak in his stout hands and drew it round his head, hiding his beautiful face, for he felt shame before the Phaeacians, as from beneath his brow he dropped the tears. But when the sacred bard paused in the song, Odysseus dried his tears, took from his head the cloak, and seizing his double cup, poured offerings to the gods. Then, as the other would begin again, cheered on to sing by the Phaeacian chiefs, for they enjoyed the story, again would Odysseus, covering his head, break into sobs. And yet he hid from all the rest the tears he shed. Only Alcinous marked him and took heed, for he sat near and heard his deep-drawn sighs. And to the Phaeacians, who delight in oars, he straightway said, "Hearken, Phaeacian captains and counselors. Now have we satisfied desire for the impartial feast and for the lyre, which is the fellow of the stately feast. Let us, then, come away and try all kinds of games, so that the stranger, going home, may tell his friends how greatly we surpass all other men in boxing, wrestling, leaping, speed of foot." So saying, he led the way. The others followed after. The page hung on its peg the tuneful lyre, then took by the hand Demodocus and led him from the hall, guiding his steps along the self-same road by which the rest of the Phaeacian chiefs went forth to view the games. Thus to the assembly place they came, a great troop following after, thousands in number, and many a gallant youth stood waiting there. Forth stood Acroneus, Ochialus, and Alatrius, Nautius and Primnius, Anchialus and Eretmius, Pontius and Prorius, Thoon and Abyssinius, and Amphialus the son of Polyneus, son of the carpenter. Forth also stood a youth like murderous Ares, Euryalus the son of Nobulus, who was the first in beauty and in stature of all Phaeacians after brave Laodamas. Forth stood three sons of good Alcinous, Laodamas, Halius, and matchless Clitonius. At first they tried each other in the foot race. Straight from a mark their track was measured, and all flew swiftly off together, raising the dust along the plain. Best in the race was gallant Clitonius, and by such space as at the plough the mule course runs, so far he shot ahead and reached the crowd. The rest were left behind. Next, in the hardy wrestling match they had a trial, and here Euryalus surpassed all champions. At leaping, Amphialus was foremost, while at the discus the leader was Elatrius. In boxing, it was Laodamas, the good son of Alcinous. So when all hearts were gladdened by the games, up spoke Laodamas, son of Alcinous. "Come, friends, and let us ask the stranger if he knows games and has some skill in any. In build, at all events, he is no common man. In thighs and calves and arms above, strong neck and massive chest. Fit years he does not lack, only he has been broken down by many hardships. For nothing, I maintain, is worse to break a man than sea life, however strong he be." Then answered him Euryalus, and said, "Laodamas, what you say is rightly spoken. Go challenge him yourself by word of mouth." Now, when the good son of Alcinous heard his words, he went and stood before them all, and thus addressed Odysseus. "Come, good old stranger, do you also try the games, if you have skill in any? Games, you should know, there's no greater glory for a man in all his life than when he wins with his own feet and hands. Come then and try. Drive trouble from your heart. Your journey hence shall not be long delayed. Already the ship is launched, the sailors ready." Then wise Odysseus answered him and said, "Laodamas, why mock me with this challenge? Sorrow is on my heart far more than games, for in times past much have I borne and much have toiled, and now I sit in your assembly, longing for my home, and supplicate your king and all his people." Then answered back Euryalus and mocked him to his face, "No, indeed, stranger. You do not look like one expert in games, much as these count with men. More like a person moving to and fro on ships of many oars, captain of trading seaman, one whose mind is on his cargo, watching freights and greedy gains. You are not like an athlete." But looking sternly on him, wise Odysseus said, "Stranger, your words are rude. You seem a heedless person. So true it is that not to all alike the gods grant what is pleasing, in stature, wisdom, and the power of speech. For one man is in form inferior, but God crowns his words with beauty, and men behold him and rejoice. With sure effect he speaks, and a sweet modesty. He shines where men are gathered, and as he walks the town men gaze as on some god. And one again in form is like the immortals, but his is not the crowning grace of words. So you, in form, are excellent. Better God could not fashion. But you're weak in judgment. You stirred the very soul within my breast by talking so unmannerly. No, I am not unskilled in games, as you declare. I was among the foremost, I maintain, while I could trust my youth and these my arms. Now I am overwhelmed with pain and trouble. For much have I endured, cleaving my way through wars of men and through the boisterous seas. Still, even so, all woe-worn as I am, I will attempt the games, because your words were galling. You provoked me, talking thus." He spoke, and with his cloak still on, he sprang and seized a discus larger than the rest, and thick, heavier by not a little than those which the Phaeacians were using for themselves. This, with a twist, he sent from his stout hand. The stone hummed as it went. Down to the ground crouched the Phaeacian oarsmen, notable men at sea, at the stone's cast. Past all the marks it flew, swift speeding from his hand. Athena marked the distances, taking a human form, and thus she spoke and cried aloud, "A blind man, stranger, could pick out your piece by feeling merely, because it is not huddled in the crowd, but lies ahead of all. Have a good heart, this bout at least, for no Phaeacian will reach that or overpass it." She spoke, and glad was long-tried royal Odysseus, pleased that he saw a true friend in the ring. And now with lighter heart he called the Phaeacians, "Come up to that, young men. Soon I will send another as far, I think, or farther. And if there's one among you all whose heart and spirit bids, come, let him try me, for you vexed me very sore, in boxing, wrestling, or the foot race even. It matters not to me. Let any Phaeacian try, except Laodamas. He is my host, and who would quarrel with his entertainer? Witless the man must be, and altogether worthless, who challenges his host to games, when in a foreign land. He hinders his own welfare. None of the rest I either dread or scorn, but I will gladly know you all and prove you face to face. Not at all weak am I in any games men practice. I understand full well handling the polished bow, and I should be the first to strike my man when sending an arrow in the throng of foes, however many comrades stood around and shot at their men too. None except Philoctetes excelled me with the bow at Troy when we Achaeans tried the bow. All others, I declare, I far surpass, all that are living now and eating bread on earth. The men of former days I will not seek to rival, Hercules and Eurytus of Oechalia, for these would rival with the bow immortals even. Wherefore, great Eurytus died all too soon. No age came upon him in his home, because in wrath Apollo slew him. For Eurytus had challenged him to try the bow. I send the spear farther than other men an arrow. Only I fear that in the foot race some Phaeacian may outstrip me, for rudely battered have I been on many waters, having no ease at sea for any length of time. Therefore my joints are weakened." So he spoke, and all were hushed to silence. Only Alcinous, answering, said, "Stranger, without discourtesy to us is all you say. You merely seek to prove the prowess that is yours, indignant that the man beside you in the ring insulted you, though surely no man would dispraise your prowess who knew within his heart what it was fit to say. But listen now to words of mine, that you may have a tale to tell to other heroes, when, feasting in your hall with wife and children, you recollect our prowess and the feats Zeus has vouchsafed us from our fathers' days till now. We are not faultless boxers, no, nor wrestlers. But in the foot race we run swiftly, and in our ships excel. Dear to us ever is the feast, the harp, the dance, changes of clothes, warm baths and bed. Come then, Phaeacian dancers, the best among you make us sport, so that the stranger on returning home may tell his friends how we surpass all other men in sailing, running, in the dance and song. Go, one of you, forthwith, and fetch Demodocus, the tuneful lyre that lays within our hall. So spoke godlike Alcinous, and a page sprang to fetch from the king's house the hollow lyre. Then rose the appointed umpires, nine in all, whose public work it was to order all things at the ring. They smoothed the dancing ground and cleared a fair wide ring. Meanwhile the page drew near and brought his tuneful lyre to Demodocus, who thereupon stepped to the center, and round him stood young men in the first bloom of years, skillful at dancing. They struck the splendid dance ground with their feet. Odysseus watched their twinkling feet and was astonished. And now Alcinous called on Halius and Laodamas to dance alone, for none could rival them. So taking in hand a goodly purple ball, which skillful Polybus had made them, one, bending backward, flung it toward the dusky clouds. The other, leaping upward from the earth, easily caught the ball before his feet touched ground again. Then, after they had tried the ball straight in the air, they danced upon the bounteous earth with tossings to and fro. Other young men beat time for them, standing around the ring, and a loud sound of stamping rose. Then to Alcinous said royal Odysseus, "Mighty Alcinous, renowned of all, you boasted that your dancers were the best, and now it's proved true. I'm amazed to see." He spoke. Revered Alcinous was pleased. And to the Phaeacians, who delight in oars, he straightway said, "Hearken, Phaeacian captains and counselors, this stranger really seems a man of understanding. Come then, and let us give such guest gift as is meet." 12 honored kings bear sway throughout this land, and are its rulers, and a 13th am I. Let each present a spotless robe and tunic, and a talent of precious gold. And let us speedily fetch all together, so that the stranger, having these in hand, may come to supper glad at heart. Let, too, Euryalus give satisfaction to the man by word and gift, for his speech was unbecoming. He spoke, and all approved and gave their orders. And for the bringing of the gifts each man sent forth his page. But Euryalus made answer to the king and said, "Mighty Alcinous, renowned of all, I will indeed give satisfaction to the stranger as you bid, for I will give this brazen blade. Its hilt is silver, and a sheath of fresh-cut ivory encloses it. Of great worth he will find it." So saying, he put into Odysseus' hands the silver-studded sword, and speaking in winged words, he said, "Hail, good old stranger! If any word was uttered that was harsh, straight let the sweeping winds bear it away. But the gods grant that you may see your wife and reach your land. For long cut off from friends, you have been meeting hardship." Then wise Odysseus answered him and said, "You too, my friend, all hail. May the gods grant you fortune, and may you never miss the sword you give, making amends besides in what you say." He spoke, and round his shoulders slung the silver-studded sword. As the sun set, the noble gifts were there. Stately pages bore them to the palace of Alcinous, where the sons of good Alcinous, receiving them, laid the fair gifts before their honored mother. But for the princes, revered Alcinous led the way, and entering the house they sat them down on the high seats. Then to Arete spoke revered Alcinous. "Bring hither, wife, a serviceable chest, the best you have, and lay therein a spotless robe and tunic. Then heat upon the fire a cauldron for the stranger, and warm some water, that having bathed and seen all gifts put safely by, which the kind Phaeacians brought him, he may enjoy the feast and hear the singer's song. Moreover, I will give him my goodly golden chalice, that as he pours libations at his hall to Zeus and to the other gods, he may be mindful all his days of me." He spoke, and Arete told the maids to set a great kettle on the fire as quickly as they could. They set the kettle, which supplied the bath, upon a blazing fire. They poured in water, put the wood beneath, and lighted. Around the belly of the kettle crept the flame, and so the water warmed. Meanwhile, Arete brought the stranger a goodly chest from out the chamber. She put therein the beautiful gifts, the clothing and the gold which the Phaeacians gave, and she herself put in a robe and goodly tunic. And speaking in winged words, she said, "See to the lid yourself, and deftly tie the cord, lest someone rob you on the way, when, sailing by and by on the black ship, you rest in pleasant sleep." When long-tried royal Odysseus heard these words, he straightway fitted on the lid, and deftly tied the cunning knot which potent Circe once had taught him. Therefore the housewife called him to come to the bath and bathe. And he was pleased to see the steaming water, for he was not used to care like this since he had left fair-haired Calypso's home. But there he had as constant care as if he were a god. Now when the maids had bathed him and anointed him with oil, and put upon him a goodly coat and tunic, forth from the bath he came, and went to join the drinkers. And Nausicaa, with beauty given her of the gods, stood by a column of the strong-built roof, and marveled at Odysseus, as she looked into his eyes. And speaking in winged words, she said, "Stranger, farewell. When you are once again in your own land, remember me, and how, before all others, it is to me you owe the saving of your life." Then wise Odysseus answered her and said, "Nausicaa, daughter of proud Alcinous, Zeus grant it so, he the loud thunderer, husband of Hera, that I go home and see my day of coming. Then would I there too, as to any god, give thanks to you for ever, all my days. For, maiden, it was you who gave me life." He spoke, and took his seat by King Alcinous. Men were already serving food and mixing wine. The page drew near, leading the honored bard, Demodocus, beloved of all, and seated him among the feasters, backed by a lofty pillar. Then to the page said wise Odysseus, cutting a piece of chine with plenty of meat upon it, from out a white-toothed boar, the rich fat on its sides, "Page, set before Demodocus this piece of meat, that he may eat and I may do him homage, sad though I be myself. For at the hands of all on earth bards meet respect and honor, because the muse has taught them song and loves the race of bards." He spoke, and the page bore the food and put it in the hands of Lord Demodocus. He took it and was pleased, and on the food spread out before them they laid hands. But after they had stayed desire for drink and food, then to Demodocus said wise Odysseus, "Demodocus, I praise you beyond all mortal men, whether your teacher was the muse, the child of Zeus, or was Apollo. With perfect truth you sing the lot of the Achaeans, all that they did and bore, the whole Achaean struggle, as if yourself were there, or you had heard the tale from one who was. Pass on, then, now, and sing the building of the wooden horse, made by Epeius with Athena's aid, which royal Odysseus once conveyed into the citadel, a thing of craft filled full of men, who by its means sacked Ilius. And if you now rightly relate the tale, forthwith I will declare to all mankind how bounteously God gave to you a wondrous power of song." So he spoke. Thereat the other, stirred by the god, began and showed his skill in song, starting the story where some Argives, boarding the well-benched ships, were setting sail and spreading fire through the camp, while others still, under renowned Odysseus, lay in the assembly of the Trojans, hidden in the horse, for the Trojans themselves had dragged it to their citadel. So there it stood, while long and uncertainly the people argued, seated around it. Three plans were finding favor: either to split the hollow trunk with ruthless axe, or else to drag it to the height and hurl it down the rocks, or, still, to spare the monstrous image, as a propitiation for the gods. And thus, at last, it was to end. For it was fated they should perish if their city should enclose the enormous wooden horse, where all the Argive chiefs were lying, bearing to the Trojans death and doom. He sang how they o'erthrew the town, these sons of the Achaeans, issuing from the horse, leaving their hollow ambush. Each for himself, he sang, pillaged the stately city. But Odysseus went like Ares to the palace of Deiphobus with godlike Menelaus. And there, he said, braving the fiercest fight, at last he won the day by aid of fierce Athena. So sang the famous bard. Odysseus melted into tears, and all below his eyes his cheeks were wet. And as a woman wails and clings to her dear husband, who falls for town and people, seeking to shield his home and children from the ruthless day, seeing him dying, gasping, she flings herself on him with a piercing cry, while men behind, smiting her with their spears on back and shoulder, force her along to bondage to suffer toil and trouble. With pain most pitiful her cheeks are thin. So pitifully fell the tears beneath Odysseus' brows. And yet he hid from all the rest the tears he shed. Only Alcinous marked him and took heed, for he sat near and heard his deep-drawn sighs. And to the Phaeacians, who delight in oars, he straightway said, "Hearken, Phaeacian captains and counselors, and let Demodocus hush now the tuneful lyre, because not to the pleasure of us all he sings to-day. For since we supped, and since the sacred bard began, this stranger has not ceased from bitter sighs. Surely some grief hovers about his heart. Let then the bard cease singing, that all alike be merry, stranger and entertainers, for that is better far. Since, for the worthy stranger's sake, all things are ready now, escort and friendly gifts which heartily we grant. Even as a brother is the stranger and the suppliant treated by any man who has a grain of understanding. And do not you, with wily purpose, longer hide what I shall ask. Plain speech is better. Tell me the name by which at home your father and mother called you, they and the other folk, your townsmen and your neighbors. For none of all mankind can lack a name, be he of low degree or high, when once he has been born, since in the very hour of birth parents give names to all.